I want to see the team have the kind of fight that they had in 2016, even if we shocked the world. Shocked the world!
Playing a Mexican team in the next round.
That's what I was about to say.
Powered it forward, Jack Price in goal.
And the Colorado Rapids, the team from the Rockies, have scaled their own mountain tonight. They are MLS Cup winners.
We'll give you the ball so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh. Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to another episode of Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. My name is Matt Pollard. I'm recording this on the evening of Thursday, December 20th, 2018, the Thursday before Christmas. Just, I think, 4 shopping days left until Christmas for those of you who haven't finished up your shopping. Mark is off in Mexico with the family right now because I guess, you know, when you're a Jew during Christmas, it's either go on vacation with your family or go to the movies and then watch and then go to the movies and then eat Chinese food. So we'll have a little bit of a split pod for you tonight. Mark did send in a nice podcasting audio postcard addressing a few things that kind of fit in well with our Ask HTHL segment that we'll have a little bit in the show. But until we get to that, we'll be having a solo pod. I was thinking about this and scrolling through to get some the Ask HTHLs, and I came upon a funny meme that Rapids Memes had sent us, and it reminded me of a story that I thought I would share to replace the banter, since Mark and I, you know, and Mark isn't here to help me, you know, pontificate about whatever the news of the day is, you know, something related to, you know, him being, you know, a growing father. That's hilarious. So I have my DMs open on LWS Matt Pollard. I believe at least for most, if not all of its existence, at Rapids 96 podcast has also had open DMs. I do that mostly for a communication standpoint. I do it from a feedback standpoint. Sometimes listeners or readers want to say something to me that they don't necessarily want out in the ether. And that's also generally, at least in my experience, a good thing to have in terms of, you know, trying to get sourcings going. And then, you know, in the event that somebody wants to contact me about something else, you know, I just like to have that door open as well. But sometimes that also, you know, exposes you to unsolicited criticism or criticism in which there is no repercussion of someone posting something that everybody else on the Twitterverse can say. A lot of times that I'll get questions from listeners or readers who just didn't want that to be shared in public. In some cases, a few people really curious or really digging through the weeds have asked me for information off the record that I might not be able to share on some of my other channels. That gets into a little bit of a weird line to, you know, a weird line to walk from a journalistic standpoint that I've, you know, tried to handle very carefully. But in other cases, you just get really, really hilarious hot takes or just complete open criticism that's really good for, like, the Jimmy Kimmel segment mean tweets. And one of them in particular I thought was really, really hilarious this summer, or this season during Eidnergate, before I really started digging into that story and breaking down some of the news, some of the hearsay, and then some of the dynamics that ultimately led to how Eigner left the club. And I was accused of being a part of the Rapids deep state, which was kind of funny. I won't say who the person was who accused me of that, but I guess the fact that some of you think that A, that there is a Rapids deep state, and B, that Mark and I, as two people who cover this team, started a podcast specifically to provide an independent channel for us to constructively criticize and, on many cases in 2018, lambaste the team. Think that, you know, we're the... I don't want to make a political argument, like, reference to somebody, given that we probably have, you know, people who support both political parties or independents on the podcast. You know, being a part of the state media and then doing so under the table, so to speak, was really funny. But then there was another one, maybe a year, maybe 18 months ago, in which somebody genuinely asked if Rapids Memes was my burner account. I'll be honest, I have no idea who does Rapids Memes. I have a little bit of a, not a conspiracy theory, but a conspiracy hypothesis that it's Marco Cummings of Pro Soccer USA, purely for him to troll me and other members. I'm pretty open as it is on Twitter. You know, I will say things that I'm thinking, and I'm often not holding back or trying to maintain some public image that is not an image that I would have in off-air conversations with Mark or other members of the Rapids media or other members of the American soccer media. And, you know, what I'm putting out there is genuinely what I think, opinions that I have, or information that I have found out about. So I feel that I'm open enough to where I don't need a burner account, but I do think it's funny that people think that I'm that some people thought that I was Rapids Memes and that was my burner account to go about things. I'm not very good at Photoshop, so I think that goes without saying. And then the last time that we did I did a solo pod, as a ginger, I normally don't take to people making fun of my red hair too well. Like, I'm fine with it, I just shove it off, but a lot of times it's just really, really old, or, you know, not something that's very original. You know, it's referencing the South Park episode, you know, where gingers don't have souls, or making some other joke or some reference to me being a Weasley, even though I wouldn't consider myself a Gryffindor, and neither have any of the Pottermore or other Facebook or BuzzFeed quizzes I've done on my Harry Potter house. So, you know, those aren't very original. But so when I did the solo pod, when Mark was busy driving all the way to Pittsburgh in August, Rapids Memes photoshopped together a bunch of photos of Beaker. That's the little ginger lab assistant member of the Muppets who helps out the green guy with glasses and no eyeballs. I don't remember what his name off the top of my head is, but I thought that was really, really hilarious. So Rapids Memes or whoever, you know, at Rapids 96 Podcast, at LWS Matt Pollard, send us your best ginger memes for what you think me doing a solo pod or a solo segment looks like. And I'll retweet and favorite the best one from either or both of those accounts. Now on to the soccer. The Colorado Rapids had another busy week in the off season when it came to off-season transactions. They have acquired two players since last we had a podcast. Diego Rubio, a forward formerly of Sporting Kansas City, and then Philadelphia Union right back Keegan Rosenberry. The big news from early on the week was part of not a three-team trade in the sense that, you know, point A goes to point B, goes to point C, goes back to point A, but three teams involved in an overall transaction. So in order for the Colorado Rapids to get Diego Rubio, they had to give them Kellen Rowe, formerly of the New England Revolution, in addition to $300 in ZAM, that's XAM, so $100,000 in targeted allocation money, and then $200,000 in general allocation money. I've seen more recently people refer to it on Twitter as Garber Bucks, so I think we're going to make that a thing in this episode. So $300 total of MLS Monopoly money, Garber Bucks. But in order to get Kellen Rowe, they had to trade for him from the New England Revolution for Edgar Castillo. In the New England Revolution press release, it was announced that on Tuesday of this week, the Rapids had already re-signed Edgar Castillo. I did a little bit of digging. That statement is true from the New England Revolution, but everything that I've heard is that the Revolution paid the transfer fee. Now, part of MLS, you know, transparency walkingness, or MLS transparency lack thereof, is that it's technically a transaction between New England Revolution and Monterey. So the actual trade between the Revs and the Rapids was really just for Edgar Castillo's rights based on the contract that had been agreed upon. In order for that to happen, Edgar Castillo had to no longer be a member of Monterey FC of Liga MX. New England Revolution paid the transfer fee. Haven't found out any information on that. I know, you know, the rumble, the word on the street was that the initial, when the loan deal was struck between the Rapids and Monterey, that there was $1 million transfer fee option at the end of that loan deal that the Rapids chose not to exercise. They continued negotiations. I had heard rumblings that Monterey wanted something more than that. I have heard that whatever New England Revolution got sent to Monterey was significantly less than that. So there's a non-zero possibility that you could look at this from a monetary standpoint of New England Revolution giving cash to giving some cash to the Rapids and the Rapids sending that to Monterey. You could also look at that as potentially the Rapids contributing $300,000 in allocation money towards that transfer fee if it was in excess of $1 million. But in any case, that is the trade that ultimately went down. And the Rapids send Kellen Rowe along to Kansas City in exchange for Diego Rubio. Oh, excuse me, I had that mixed up. Kellen, the allocation money was not sent to the New England Revolution. The allocation money was sent to Sporting Kansas City. So it was Kellen Rowe and $300,000 in Garber bucks to Sporting Kansas City for Diego Rubio. And then it was a straight-up trade between Kellen Rowe and Edgar Castillo, a straight player swap on that end. I like this trade overall for reasons that I'll be getting into later in the podcast. I think it's becoming increasingly clear to me that the Rapids are going to have the 4-4-2 diamond formation be their primary formation. And, you know, it's TBD on whether or not the 3-5-2-5-3-2 setup will be the secondary formation that Anthony Hudson is looking to employ in 2019. Edgar Castillo was most effective as a left-wing back. He's been a left-wing back for the majority of his time in Liga MX with various clubs, and his offensive prowess just doesn't have the exact same value if he has to have more defensive responsibilities in a four-man back line rather than in a five-man back line with the three center backs and then the two wing backs. So Edgar Castillo, in the context of that potential formation shift, just doesn't have the same value to the Rapids. You know, if they were going all in on the 3-5-2, then they absolutely needed to bring back Edgar Castillo because he was so critical to the build-up play that they had, converting from defending to getting the ball with possession to then getting it forward, everything that he was able to do. If he's only able to go forward, you know, only 75% as much as the time, he's just not that effective. And defensively, at 31 years old, he's not the same player that he used to be. So he's more of a liability, not as bad as some of the other defenders. Don't scream at me on Twitter, folks, you know, that the Rapids are dealing with right now. But just, you know, it's a little bit of a slightly oblong, you know, it's an egg-shaped, you know, it's egg, you know, it's an egg-shaped peg into a circular hole that you were trying to work with Edgar Castillo potentially as a left back as opposed to a left wing back. So he didn't necessarily have as much value. That said, technically an American domestic player because he's international with the United States. You know, potentially the opportunity to barter with Monterey, given that the Rapids did not exercise the option to get the transfer fee down, you know, towards the end of his prime, but still a highly valuable player. He had value in this league on the open market. And if the Rapids didn't value that asset in terms of what they're, how they as a team valued him, then at least look at how the market views him overall and see if you can get something that does have value, even if that's just trading an asset you don't want for another asset you don't want to then get an asset that you want. You know, the ends justifies the means in this sense. This was an extremely creative transaction that Porrick Smith and the front office went after. I think there's an interesting conversation that you could have of, well, if you could just get Kellen Rowe straight up for Edgar Castillo as a domestic player, I wonder where a Kellen Rowe would have fit in with this team. He started off as a winger with the New England Revolution under Jay Heaps, you know, and that team was, you know, more of a happy feet, play it on the ball, you know, knock it around. And it was a lot of young kids. That was when Diego Fagundes was still very young on this team. Juan Agudelo was on the New England Revolution. And so it was kind of a bunch of young attackers who could ping the ball around and be dribbly and, you know, interconnect and play 1-2s. Lee Wynn was on that team before he was traded to LAFC this past season. And then you come in and Brad Friedel comes in his first year, and Kellen Rowe, you know, an outside back because he has some skill and can get forward, and they didn't really have a position for him. So I don't know that you have a winger in a 4-4-2 diamond, because I don't think Kellen Rowe's a number 8. I think you want him in a little bit more space to where you don't want him being an underneath striker, and he's certainly not a number 9. And while he does bring a lot of things offensively in terms of connection play and getting out wide and using the speed as well, he's kind of in that similar role to Edgar Castillo, where he just I don't know that I want him as a left back. However, I would totally take him as a wing back or as a winger on either side of the field in a 4-3-3 for example. So, you know, I definitely think that he would have brought some attacking prowess to the Rapids attack that's already added a whole bunch of other assets. I don't know that I would have believed it, but I think an argument could be made, or there could, or a curiosity could be made, or someone could be curious about Kellen Rowe as a number 10 for the Rapids in a 4-4-2 diamond, or Kellen Rowe as an underneath striker. I don't think that's him. I think he's a winger. You know, I would put him on the left side in a 4-2-3-1, or as I just mentioned, I would put him on either the left or the right side in a 4-3-3 as well. So, you know, but Kellen Rowe also has, also has a lot of value in this league, which is why they were able to get something for him in Diego Rubio. So let's talk about Diego Rubio. Diego Rubio came to MLS 3 seasons ago during the 2016 summer transfer window. He is a Hungarian international, if I'm not mistaken. No, excuse me, he is Chilean. Peter Vermees ended up finding him. And he's been mostly a bench player for Sporting Kansas City, or at the very least a super sub on the attacking front. Came through in the middle of the 2016 season, only had 1 goal, no assists, and 3 starts in 15 appearances. But the last 2 seasons, he's compiled almost 1,800 minutes, and in that, he scored 14 goals and 8 assists. His most effective season was this past year, 2018, was dealing with some injuries in the first half of the season, and then was that attacking super sub for Peter Vermees and Sporting Kansas City. Only 781 minutes played, but 8 goals and 6 assists. That's really, really darn good. I think that was a 0.92 goals per 90 minutes that I tweeted out the other day. And he's also done this on very efficiently in terms of the number of shot opportunities that he's gotten. This past season, he had only 29 shots, only 15 on goal. Half of his shots on goal, folks, and a third of his total shots, and a fourth of his total shots, ended up in the back of the net. That is an extremely good conversion rate. That is extremely efficient in terms of the opportunities that he's been getting and him putting them into the back of the net. I think Diego Rubio walks into the squad and immediately is that underneath striker under Kai Kamara. He's roaming. He'll do some more of that channel running. He'll split a fullback and a center back in terms of gap control and everything. He'll work from side to side. I think he can do a lot of offensively what we saw from Sam Nicholson when he had that really, really good run before his back injury in the game at LAFC. I feel like Diego Rubio is a better version of that, and the stats would suggest that in terms of the conversion rate of the chances that he's gotten. So I think he's going to be, I think he has potential to be an excellent foil and strike partner for Kai Kamara in the 4-4-2. I think he has enough number 10-y skills to where he can at least combine, or if whoever is playing at the top of the diamond can go forward and Rubio can end up coming back. So this is an excellent pickup. You know, a guy who is a substitute and the super sub for the best team in the Western Conference of 2018 has to at least be a good player for a team that was one of the worst teams in the Western Conference in 2018. So I like Rubio. I have to give credit to Porrick Smith and his staff for creativity in terms of understanding how to go from point A to point B in terms of, we have an asset that we don't necessarily value, but we know has value on the open market. Let's trade him and then do a couple of other moves to try and get something else that we have that is of value. And then Diego Rubio, only 25 years old, so right about to enter his prime. Say what you will about Kai Kamara at 34 years old, Diego Rubio could be here for a while. And, you know, with the Rapids looking at bringing in a number 10 and a number 9, you know, Diego Rubio could be the Bradley Wright Phillips to the Thierry Henry, or he could be the, you know, the Mike McGee to the Robbie Keane in terms of those, you know, those striker relationships, budget player in his prime versus, you know, vis-a-vis, you know, a strike partner who's a DP going to do most of the work, but a rising tide raises all ships. And in this case, Diego Rubio is in the right part of the harbor in terms of improving the amount of minutes that he's getting, potentially his goal production, and being in a good situation in terms of Kai Kamara occupying center backs and giving him space to get in behind and do some skill play and dribble and take players on. And then eventually that number 9 could be in a very similar mold, but hopefully a better and a younger version of Kai Kamara that would allow him to do that same thing as the Rapids way evolves. The only other thing that I will add on that, based on his past 2 years of goal chances, and the stat that I'm about to quote from you folks is at American Soccer Analytics, Diego Rubio has a slightly above average goals to X goals. So remember, we talk about this in the middle of the season. The expected goals for an average striker is the percentage of chance that a striker converts a particular chance based on location on the field, what they're striking the ball with, so their head, you know, right foot, left foot, or rather dominant foot, non-dominant foot. Is it a volley? Is it a volley? Are they dribbling? Where's the goalkeeper's position? And then where's the defender's position? And then if you add up all those chances for an entire game, you get a team's overall X goal or a player's overall X goals. And then if you add up the entirety of the season, then you get the team, then you get that player's X goals for the entire season. You compare that to the number of goals that they got, you know whether or not they were either slightly lucky or potentially more skillful in their finishing. And in the last two seasons, Diego Rubio has been had a slightly positive goals minus X goals count. So we talked about this in the past, where Dominic Baggi is a relatively average finisher in the context of other MLS strikers. Diego Rubio, albeit with a smaller sample size, but still lots of quality chances, is a slightly above average finisher. So I like this acquisition. I like the trade that they made. I think it was a net positive. You know, I still think that there's, you know, there's now a gaping hole at the left back position. The Rapids, I think, just filled the right back position with Keegan Rosenberry. I'll talk about that in a minute. So, you know, they filled a couple of big holes that they've had. They've added some depth on the attacking side. Anthony Hudson, Porrick Smith have said that they wanted to bring in attacking players. They've done that. Still not sure what they're doing from a defensive side of things, particularly at the left back position. I don't know that I would feel comfortable just saying, okay, Sam Vines is the starter, and we'll see what happens if he sinks or swims. I think sinks or swims. I think they need another option there. Let's move on to the other Rapids news of the week. As previously mentioned, the Colorado Rapids acquired the rights to Keegan Rosenberry earlier this week from the Philadelphia Union. To get Keegan Rosenberry, they sent Philly $100,000 in 2019 general allocation money, $50,000 in 2019 targeted allocation money, and $100,000 in 2020 general allocation money, and then there's an extra conditional payment in there for a potential another $100,000. So a grand total of 300 Garber bucks, with the potential for that to go to 400 Garber bucks. I assume that is based on some performance metric that they have for Keegan Rosenberry as a member of the Rapids. Keegan Rosenberry is a Georgetown product. Like Diego Rubio, he is 25 years old, and he has spent his entire professional career with the Philadelphia Union. He was a first-round draft pick, I believe, with the Union back in the 2016 Super Draft. Has been a starter with the team pretty much ever since. Did have some injury concerns and was a bench player in part of the 2017 season, but in his rookie year, 34 games started, and then in 2018, 31 games started, 32 played. He has three goals and six assists all time. This past season, he had one goal and three assists in just under 2,800 minutes played. Not a whole lot of fouls committed. 29 fouls committed in 31 games. That's less than one a game. That's pretty efficient as far as you know, compared to some of his other Rapids teammates, and then only five yellow cards in his entire MLS career. So Keegan Rosenberry, I think one of the better young American right backs in this league. I still think a little bit of a work in progress, and you know, who knows how much of that was the up and down nature of the Philadelphia Union and the other players that he was being put around. As we saw when the Rapids defeated the Philadelphia Union early on in the 2018 season, Josh Yarrow and just that center back combination was just an absolute mess. So if you're a right back with major defensive responsibilities, are you potentially having to overcompensate for what the defense was? That said, the Philadelphia Union defense got a lot better. They ultimately ended up making the playoffs. They made the US Open Cup final, where they lost to Houston Dynamo. So things improved progressively, and I think that Keegan Rosenberry's reemergence in the Union under Jim Kirchen in the 2018 season was definitely a factor in that. I've been trying to find a little bit more information about overall evaluation. You know, we have a lot of really good data based on trades that players or trades that teams have made on forwards and on number 10s and on central midfielders. You know, you look at the Lee Wynn trade, for example, the $1.6 million in total allocation money that that Orlando City sent for Dominic Dwyer a couple years ago. You look at the Darlington Nagbe trade that was right around $1 million. You look at Ola Kamara for Giassi Zardes and some allocation money as well. You know, teams have traded domestic forwards and domestic number 10s and domestic central midfielders and domestic center backs a lot in this league. We have a good understanding based on how good those players are and how much teams are giving up to get them in terms of total valuable assets what that position is valued on the open market. We don't have that a whole lot at the outside back and at the winger position. I can't think off the top of my head the last right back trade that was just straight a singular player for a single total amount of cash with a straight cash value, as opposed to maybe an international roster spot thrown in there, maybe another player involved, a draft pick, etc., etc. So we don't have a whole lot. We don't have a lot of precedent in terms of how much Keegan Rosenberry would have been available on the open market in MLS in the same way that we would have seen that from, say, a number 8 who there's a good, you know, 3-4 years that player has been in MLS, or a number 10, or certainly, a backup forward like Diego Rubio, for example. You know, as I mentioned in the pod last week, you know, Kai Kamara for just an international roster spot, you know, is about $100,000 in allocation money. You would be hard-pressed to get a striker who scored 14 goals in 2018 for a third of that these days. We don't have a whole lot of data on this one. My hunch is that maybe the Rapids overpaid, or at the very least just how the allocation money was broken down, in the fact that they've already committed allocation money to send to the Philadelphia Union over the course of multiple years, given that they gave them both 2019 cash and 2020 cash. And then depending on what that stipulation is, you know, you're looking at paying a significant fraction of $1 million in order to get this guy, when right backs, they still have value in MLS, just aren't, you know, you don't have the same measurable, you don't have the same production that you can quantify in the way that you have that for strikers in terms of goals and assists, etc. So TBD on the overall value of this trade in terms of what Keegan Rosenberry brings to you right now versus how much, say, you know, a DeMarcus Beasley would be worth on the open market, or how much a Kamar Lawrence would be worth, or say a Nick Lima, or a AJ De La Garza or something like that. We just don't have that. We don't have the same number of data points because there haven't been that many trades. So I am hesitant to pass judgment on the overall value of this trade. And I do think we need to see a little bit more. You know, I think, you know, I'm curious to see how Keegan Rosenberry is incorporated into the team tactically. You know, it's very, very different from what he would have been playing in the Philadelphia Union when he was drafted by Tim Kirchen and Ernie Stewart for a project in a particular system. And he'd kind of only been doing that as a professional, and now things are shifting. So I'm curious to see how that goes out. TBD on this trade. That said, you know, I think he was probably the best, you know, if you're looking for a, you know, budget player, you know, a couple $100,000 a year, domestic right back in MLS, I'm not sure you could have gotten better in terms of what Keegan Rosenberry is able to bring you. Certainly his age as well, and certainly filling a role that you distinctly had a problem at. As Mark and I have talked about, you know, the right back position was just a rotating carousel of players who absolutely failed in that role. You're looking at, you know, number eights getting put into that position like Johan Blomberg, and not a Boateng, where they were just completely, you know, they were completely out of their depth, and you genuinely have to wonder what the coaching staff was thinking playing them in that position. You saw some of the good moments and some of the bad moments that both Kip Colby and Dylan Serna had in that role, and then, you know, Marlon Hairston, who I thought was going to have a breakout season in 2018, just, you know, had a little bit of a slow start, and then, you know, never really recovered his form after the cartilage procedure that he had. So going into the season, the Rapids had a lot of options at right back, but they didn't have a lot of sure things at right back, and they needed to have a plan for that position that wasn't have Marlon Hairston start for the first 2 months of the season, and then if he isn't able to play his way out of his funk, just start, you know, throwing you-know-what at the wall and then hoping that something ends up sticking. Now you have a de facto guy who's been a starter the last 3 years in MLS in that position, doesn't cost you any TAM or a DP slot, is a budget player, doesn't cost you an international roster spot. You know, there's a for sure thing. I am sleeping easy tonight knowing that Keegan Rosenberry is coming in and can immediately start for the Rapids at the right back position. You have Marlon Hairston still there, who's probably a bubble player, maybe an off-the-bench option, you know, who could play in a couple of different positions, you know, possibly at the very least challenge Keegan Rosenberry to keep him honest. But at the very least now, you've got two players who can do that. And if one of them, who you have a track record for saying that he hasn't been able to make it work under the current head coach, you have a player who has proven that he can do it in MLS, and that is a position that fits him. It's what he played in college. It's what he's played with the Philadelphia Union on the way to making the playoffs and multiple U.S. Open Cup finals. Let's move on to some other news and notes. January camp, the roster for the United States men's national team, the first January camp and first ever get-together of players in a team under new manager Greg Berhalter, will be assembling in the next coming weeks. And Colorado Rapids players Kellen Acosta and Keegan Rosenberry were both a part of it. I know people were getting a little bit all excited on Twitter just in general about the January camp. I think it's a fun thing to talk about from a banter and a water cooler standpoint. And I guess it does have value in the sense that it's the first group that the new manager, Triple G, or 3G rather, will be bringing in. That said, I don't put a whole lot of stock into January camp. There are a lot of very, very good American internationals who will be a part of the squad and will be starting for the squad who are playing over in Europe. January camp is mostly a who's who of domestic MLS players, and in particular guys who had a really good club season the previous calendar year. I think Kellen Acosta is certainly deserving of that based on the way that he's played with the Rapids. I think Keegan Rosenberry, probably one of the better not old American right backs that you have, who's starting in MLS right now. So I think they're both deserving it in terms of getting an opportunity, coming in, seeing what they can provide. I have doubts, isn't the right word. I guess I just, it's January camp, and who knows what Greg Berhalter is planning, the conversations he's having with players, and how much January camp actually matters to him, as opposed to just getting a couple looks at guys, who might make the provisional roster for a Gold Cup and then are going to come in and really just be a depth option if somebody gets hurt and probably not involved. I think Kellen Acosta is definitely fighting for a starting position under Greg Berhalter. We'll see what he likes from a formational standpoint, whether it's the 4-2-3-1 that he played mostly with Columbus Crew, or just given some of his Dutch connections and Ernie Stewart's Dutch connections and the assets or the talent pool that he has, does he potentially look at a 4-3-3? I do think Kellen Acosta is potentially facing a slightly unfair uphill battle in terms of the long-term projections of him being a starter, simply because there are multiple other central midfielders who are going to be playing in Europe regularly in the calendar year of 2019 who are just better than him at this point. Weston McKennie is a teenager, and he's going to be playing for Schalke in the Champions League knockout stage. That's a lot better than being a starter on an MLS team that isn't Atlanta United or Toronto FC, or to a lesser extent, Seattle Sounders probably. And then, you also have Chandler Adams, who's making the move to the mothership, Red Bull Leipzig. We'll see where he gets involved in the team. But those are two quality number 6, number 80 style guys who are younger than Kellen Acosta, so far have had higher ceilings in terms of what they've produced at the club level than Kellen Acosta, and two players who are immediately playing at a higher level than Kellen Acosta. Now, if Kellen Acosta in, the 2021-2022 season is a best 11 box-to-box midfielder and is an all-star and is getting the Rapids to the playoffs, and then I think that's a different story. But I just don't know that Acosta, balling out even as much as he is, doing that on a non-playoff team in MLS is just going to get him the same respect as Weston McKennie scoring goals in Champions League for a Bundesliga team, or saying the similar thing of Tyler Adams. And I haven't even mentioned Columbus Crew captain and homegrown Will Trapp, who Greg Berhalter is very, very familiar with, having previously coached him for the last several years at Columbus Crew. Does Greg Berhalter, either in familiarity or possible favoritism, favor a Will Trapp over Kellen Acosta? And then Keegan Rosenberry, the U.S. national team is pretty much set at right back from a starting position standpoint with DeAndre Yedlin and everything that he's doing in England right now with Newcastle. So, I think Keegan Rosenberry is probably playing for a spot just on the roster, even just the provisional roster, with the U.S. national team for the 2019 Gold Cup, and then we'll go from there. He has to be a starter on the Rapids, and I think he has to be playing well to get further consideration or another call-up. We'll see what conversations he's having with Greg Berhalter and how well he does with the rest of the squad in the January camp. Moving on, let's get to a segment of hashtag AskHTHL. We've got two AskHTHLs from this past week. The first comes to us in an email from David Malenfant asking us, Red, I'm sure this is a question you will answer on the next pod, but I do wonder both of your opinions on the net success deals. That is the Zach McMath, Nicholas Mosqueda trade, the acquisitions of Clint Irwin and Rawls, the goalkeeper. I'm interested if you all think this is a net benefit. David did send us this email prior to the acquisitions of Diego Rubio and Keegan Rosenberry, so we'll throw that in. As I mentioned in the first part of the show, Mark sent in a nice audio postcard from Mexico's. And indirectly, Mark, you actually talked about a lot of things that are in David's question. So we'll throw it to Mark for an update on what's going on with him and the family on vacation. And David will have Mark answer your AskHTHL for this week.
Hey Matt, this is your boy Mark calling in from vacation in Oaxaca, Mexico, where it's very, very sunny and nice out, but also I spent most of the day scrubbing my kids' heads for lice and dealing with a cold. So, you know, vacations, they're a mixed bag. I'm just calling in to talk about a couple of the moves the Rapids made. They have added Andre Rawls. They have added Keegan Rosenberry. And in addition, they have added Diego Rubio, trading his rights or acquiring his rights in a trade that sent the rights to Edgar Castillo to New England and Kellen Rowe to Sporting Kansas City. All in all, it's kind of a good set of trades. Matt Doyle on MLS was pretty critical of the Rapids for not acquiring a creator, which they could have had in Kellen Rowe, and deciding to go with someone who was a little bit more of an attacking threat, and also wondering how Rubio and Kai Kamara fit together. I'm not really worried about it. I think they both fit up top nicely as strikers and push Nicky Jackson down to that normal role that he deserves to have in his second year of being a 75th minute throw-on guy. I think Rubio is a good move, and I also think if the Rapids were not able to re-sign Castillo because of the transfer fee they were going to have to pay to Monterrey, it's a pretty good decision on their part. I do know that Castillo was a very valuable left back, and we don't really have a good person to fill in, which is why the Rapids went out and at least locked down the right back spot a little bit better, or at least they think they did, by getting Keegan Rosenberry for a whole bunch of Tam and Gam. Rosenberry, I have watched less Eastern Conference soccer than Western Conference soccer, but I always found him to be a work in progress. He struggled with a few injuries in his first 2 years. Apparently he had a very good year last year. I think the whole question about this is whether he'll be a massive upgrade on Marlon Harrison, who I think was really ready to take over the right back position last year, but didn't really take it and own it. I think this all spells not good things for Marlon Hairston, who will probably either stay with the Rapids unhappily for the rest of the year or be dealt by the time February rolls around. Colorado in general got better over this these trades. We definitely have a few pieces left to fall in, and I think it's thin in some spots, but they've put together a roster that might be able to compete. They have definitely spent a lot of money, lost a few draft picks, and that's a small concern for me. Anyhow, I'll be down here probably trying to resist buying every Mexican League soccer jersey that I see on the street, but if I come home with a bag full of Mexican soccer jerseys and I am stopped at customs for going over the limit, it was nice knowing you all, and please send checks to U.S. Customs and Border Enforcement, 111 Juarez, Mexico. See ya.
I'm back, listeners. Thank you to David for the question, and thank you to Mark for unknowingly answering it and then also giving us an update on your excursions to buy scarves and soccer scarves and soccer jerseys well down in Mexico. Let's move on. We have an AskHTHL from Twitter from Mark Weatherly. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And then Mark, you've got a couple questions, so I'll just ask them in piecemeal. Do you think that the Rapids are done with adding to their talent slash roster for the 2019 season? Mark, I do not think that the Rapids are done. I still think that they have a number of holes that they do need to fill. As I mentioned, with the departure of Edgar Castillo, I think there's a serious question of what the Rapids are doing at the left back position. And I don't think that that answer, similar to the initial plan of Marlon Hairston being the starting right back in 2018, I don't think the plan or the primary or only option can be just start Sam Vines and then hope that he figures it out, or even maybe a Declan Wynn shifting to the opposite side of the field. I think they need another left back option. DeMarcus Beasley, I believe, is out of contract with the Houston Dynamo. I don't know that I'd throw a whole bunch of money on him. Maybe they end up drafting a player. Maybe they get somebody else, in free agency, but I do think they need a veteran left back option. I also have some concerns about what the Rapids are doing at the other number 8 position in the diamond. Jack Price is locked in at the number 6 role, no doubt about it. I would say the same thing of Kellen Acosta in the number 8 role on either side of the field, depending on how he's feeling and the matchups and everything. But what are the Rapids doing at the number 10 position, and what are the Rapids doing at the number 8 position? They had a number of players who are capable of playing in that number 8 role, but none of them were very convincing for me. Nana Boateng still hasn't really achieved the potential that I think the Rapids thought that he was going to. Johan Blomberg had a couple good runs during the 2018 season, but wasn't able to stay healthy. Everybody likes Cole Bassett, but Cole Bassett is also a teenager and has the potential to be wildly inconsistent. So similar to how pre-Keegan Rosenberry, the Rapids had a bunch of options, but all of them extremely questionable at the right back position, I feel that way about the number 8 position. Given the number of players they have capable of playing that role, and it's just one other position to fill, I have my doubts, Mark, as to whether or not the Rapids are going to go get a number 8. I think the more interesting thing right now is what are they doing at the number 10 position. They're already stacked at this point at forward with Diego Rubio and Kai Kamara in their position. Do they revisit Scouting Gashi in a withdrawn central attacking role? Does he have the mobility for that? Is he going to be able to stay healthy? I like the prospects of potentially having Nicholas Mesquita as the backup number 10 on the squad. I was speaking with a source last week, maybe 2 weeks ago, and a lot of people in the front office have been traveling pretty much nonstop. The entire scouting department is fully engaged, and it's a lot more trips to South America than Europe right now. As I wrote about in an article for Last Word on Soccer, recently, the friendly against Boca Juniors was no accident. I think the Rapids are slow but finally starting to understand the trend of young Central and South American attackers coming to MLS and their potential value in this market, more so than retreads of, middle tier English soccer players, playing in the championship. I think they're definitely trolling around and trying to find a TAM level number 10. If they were to get somebody akin to Albert Rusnak or Borch Dochkal or, even Kaku, for example, I would be I'd be elated, and I think that position would be locked in. But to answer your question shortly, Mark, the left back position is a main priority and concern for me. I have my doubts about what they're doing at the number 8 position, but I think they'll experiment. And I think that the target right now, if there's anything that the Rapids need to address, in January, it's definitely what are they doing at that number 10 position, at least having a secondary option, even if it isn't, a lockdown, this is a guy who's going to be a part of our team 4 years to come. You also asked in a secondary question, Mark, there's just so many Marks on this podcast. I got Mark Goodman, I have Mark Turner, from the Switchbacks. We've got people named with the first name Mark coming in with Ask HHL. So second question, or are they going to look to bring in some players during the January transfer window? I do think that the Rapids will be active in the January transfer window. I don't think it'll be as active as last season, but I wouldn't be shocked if they're trying to make 2 to 3 signings in the month of January. When Anthony Hudson was appointed, both he and Porrick Smith made very, very big deals saying that we have to have the entire squad assembled for the 2018 season for the start of preseason. We have to get all that work done.
Joe Mason came in a little bit late. A couple other players, you know, were moving to Colorado who came in late. You know, ultimately, Yannick Bolli was a very, very late acquisition. And I think a lot of what went wrong in the 2018 season was the Rapids getting burned by the fact that they were still making moves into the first month of the regular season. Hopefully, the front office has learned from those mistakes, and the squad is going to be at least 90% assembled by the start of their January preseason. So I do think they'll be making moves in January, but I think they definitely want to make more moves in January than they do in February. They want to have as close to a complete squad as they can for the start of preseason to have a better start and a better overall successful 2019 season. And then you added one last comment there, Mark, that I did address, but it wasn't really a question, but I'll talk about it now. Looks like they are going with a 4-4-2. So what do they need to continue to get better? I think the Rapids did a very, very good job in terms of establishing possession and started to address having possession with a purpose in the 4-4-2 time. And as I've talked about on a number of different channels, switching to the 4-4-2 diamond simplified things in terms of assignments in the midfield for all the midfielders, took some of the load off of Jack Price, and stabilized things to an extent defensively. It allowed the Rapids to have more of the ball, control more of the ball, and the tempo. They were passing the ball more, and they were also doing some good things with it in terms of having possession with the purpose. With a purpose. Where the Rapids struggled was ultimately going from having the ball in their own half to having the ball in the middle of the park to getting the ball into the final third and creating chances in that final third. The big thing that I harped on in the second half of the season was just a complete lack of chance creation from that central channel, from anybody who was playing there, whether it was a number 10, whether it was one of the strikers or anything. Everything was going out to the wings, and the Rapids didn't have numbers in the box to do anything when service was provided there. I think the next big thing for the Rapids, as we've seen with their most of their acquisitions this winter, is to do things in the middle of the final third. Do things centrally, do things in zone 14, do things inside the box. Kai Kamara, very, very good header of the ball. He is going to be able to convert on those crosses that the wide players are putting into the box. Nicholas Mosquita and Diego Rubio, they're channel runners. They can dribble, they can take players on, they can do things from out wide, cutting inside, and they can do things starting centrally and then going forward. I think that's the next big thing for the Rapids, is they've established now a structure to where they're going to be slightly better defensively. Still have concerns about the personnel at center back personally, but they're going to be more of a possession team this year for the whole of the 2019 season than they were in, say, the middle half, or certainly the first half of the 2018 season. Towards the end, they were doing a good job of getting the ball and getting the ball into generally desirable positions, but then weren't doing a very good job of turning those into clear-cut chances or turning those chances into goals. They've gotten players who are able to put the ball on the back of the net. They've gotten some more players who are able to create chances. I really like to see them get a number 10, but regardless, that's the next step, both in terms of how they actually score goals, in terms of we have to win the ball, we have to get the ball into the opponent's half with numbers, we have to get the ball into the final third and convert chances. They need to do that on a singular basis, and if they do that on a whole, then they're going to be better for it in individual games and over the course of a 34-game season. They've done that from a personnel standpoint. Hudson now needs to pull all the strings, put the guys in a position to be successful, and those players need to execute. They need to turn the acquisition of talent and the acquisition of the right types of players into good plays and into good performances and ultimately results. That does it for this episode, folks. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank our two guys, David Malafant and Mark Weatherly. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, finally, for your Ask HDHLs. Thank you to my co-host, Mark Goodman, for sending in his audio postcard. Listeners, you can follow us on Twitter at LWSMattPollard, at @soccer_rabbi. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Rapids96Podcast. You can email us at Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. We will have a pre-recorded show for you next week. We have an interview that we've used in parts in the past, but haven't given that entire audio content to you there. So there won't be a podcast talking about recent news, if there is anything, between myself and Mark. But we will be back with you in the new year to preview the expansion draft and everything else that is going on in the preseason. So with that, I want to say a very Merry Christmas to those of you who are celebrating. In the likely event that we do not speak with you before the first, Happy New Year. You know, happy holidays in general for everybody who's celebrating. Happy belated Hanukkah to those of you who are celebrating Hanukkah. I don't remember offhand what people say for Kwanzaa, but I guess happy Kwanzaa. You know, Merry Festivus for those of you who are celebrating things. I don't know if satanic worshipers have anything going on, but if for anything that you are celebrating over the course of this month or in the next 11 calendar days, marry that. You know, we are thankful to every single one of you who listens to this crap podcast and engages with me and Mark on Twitter, and we've had an absolute blast doing that for the entirety of 2018, and we are looking forward to continue that and taking it to new heights as the Rapids try to do the same thing as they look to hold the high line in 2019. Listeners, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. We will see you in 2019.